I'm Anna Sale in for Leonard Lopate. And was there a moment in this week of holidays and work and herky-jerky weather patterns when you just exhaled and said, ugh, I'm feeling overwhelmed? Me too. Bridget Schulte is here to tell us we are not alone. In her new book, she explores why we're all stressed out and overwhelmed and how we can reclaim a little more sanity and even time. She's a reporter for The Washington Post, a fellow at the New America Foundation, and a mother of two. And her new book is called Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. It's published by Sarah Crichton Books, an imprint of Farrar, Straus & Giroux. And I'm pleased it brings her to the Leonard Lopate Show. Hello, Bridget.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Hi. We are also taking your calls for your strategies for dealing with those moments when you have that overwhelmed feeling. 212-433-9692, 212-433-9692. Also give us a call if you have some questions about how to deal with that overwhelmed feeling. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Bridget Schulte, you describe your time as confetti, that it's small and all over the place and therefore hard to track.
Well, that's certainly the way that I was feeling when I began this book. And this book really is a journey. And I am delighted to say that although I'm still a work in progress, I no longer feel that way. But when I began working on this book, that is exactly what I felt like. I felt like I was trying to do sort of everything all at once and never doing anything particularly well or good enough. I worked a lot, but I never felt like I was doing enough there. I'm a mother of two, and, you know, we have these kind of crazy standards for what we expect parents and particularly mothers to do, and I felt like I was never measuring up. And, you know, I was doing everything at home and trying to juggle it all, and it did. It just felt like kind of bursts of time, little bits and scraps and pieces that, you know, that at the end of the day I worried may not add up to much.
You start the book with a visit to sociologist John Robinson, who told you that women today have about 30 hours of leisure time each week. How did that number sound to you?
Well, I'm laughing because, you know, I can laugh now, but when he told me that, you know, in the cartoons when somebody's been hit on the head with a frying pan and then you see all sorts of stars and they get really dizzy. Well, honestly, that's what it felt like. I felt like somebody had hit me on the head with a frying pan. It just seemed so completely out of the sense of possibility for me. And I just said, I don't know what you're talking about. I kind of quickly ran through my previous week when he'd said that, and I thought, well, maybe a yoga class. So that's that I ran into 10 minutes late. So that's like maybe 40 minutes of leisure time. And I just said, you're out of your mind. I don't have 30 hours of leisure. And he said, yes, you do. Come do a time study with me, and I will show you where it is. So he really laid down this challenge that I had this time, but it didn't feel like I did. And that is really, honestly, the turning point that resulted in this book.
And it's tracking the time. He walks you through your day, and something that you call, this was the hard thing that I was trying to do when I was getting from here to there, and he qualifies it as leisure.
Right. I called it in-between time. So I did. I did track my time. It took me about a year and a half. I was initially just too busy to do it, or I'd start trying to track my time, and the template that he gave me, you had to sort of try to describe what the time was. And I would call him up and say, I'm doing four things at once. It doesn't fit under any of your categories. How do I describe this time? And he just said, keep a diary and I'll figure it out. So I began carrying these little black books around, and I began writing not only what I was doing, but how I was feeling, you know, sort of in the afternoon. I'm here picking up coffee because we've run out of coffee again. Who are all these people in the cafe relaxing in the afternoon, you know, feeling sort of jealous about that? And so I finally brought those, you know, bits and scraps of scribbles up to him, and he went through them. And he found in 1 week 27 hours of what he called leisure time. And honestly, I felt like I could cry. I looked at that, and it was like 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, 15 minutes here, kind of in-between time is what I called it, waiting for something to happen. I'd taken my daughter to a ballet class, and as we were coming home, the car broke down, and we were stuck on the side of the road for 2 hours. And we were playing hangman, and thankfully this is in the days before everybody had, or we didn't have iPhones, and people weren't plugged in, so we were actually talking and playing with each other. And And he said, that was leisure time. And I said, you're kidding me. 2 hours waiting for a tow truck and that's leisure? That's really not what I had in mind. You know, when I think of leisure time, you think of that sort of timeless state, laying on a hammock in the beach or being completely absorbed in something. And I didn't have any of that kind of time in my diaries.
You use the term time contamination. What is that?
Oh, I love that term. That is one I did not make up. That's psychologists and social scientists that have come up with that. But it describes so much of, I think, so many people's experience. What they mean by contaminated time is that you've got so much on your mind. You're running through all the stuff that you've got to do at work, your to-do list, everything that you got to do at home. Oh, my goodness, the carpool, did I arrange that? Or do we have anything for dinner? Have I gone to the grocery store? You know, that kind of constant churn that goes on in your mind so that you can be in a situation that would look on the outside like leisure time, that, you know, perhaps it's a bike ride, you know, or a picnic with your family. But on the inside, you are lost in thought, and all of that kind of worrying and thinking contaminates your ability to be present in the moment. And now with technology, everybody's time, that contaminated time was a particular feeling that women tend to have because, you know, in addition to working, so many are still doing about twice the housework and childcare, yet just as they always have, even though men are doing more, or they're the kind of logistics central. They are the ones that are in charge of it all. So that you have a lot of exhausting mental labor in addition to the physical labor.
Well, let's talk about that term a little bit, Bridget. And the idea that your time is contaminated with the thoughts of all the things you have to manage, and you mentioned that women are often logistics central. Somebody's got to keep track of all those logistics. So how do you keep your time from being contaminated and also managing the operations of a family, for example?
That's a great question. And that is a lot of that's a big part of what I was searching for in this book. How do you have this kind of time for meaningful work, time for good connections with your family, loved ones, friends, and community, and time or space for leisure or for play? The three elements of the good life, work, love, and play. And that's a lot of what the sort of the journey of the book is about. And one of the most important things that I did that really, frankly, resulted in helping me finish this book is we really worked very hard at home. We had gotten completely out of whack. We started with the idea that we would have a very equal, an egalitarian marriage, that we would share housework and childcare and work equally or fairly. And man, after 20 years, it was so unfair. I was really doing everything and I was always stomping around and resentful and angry. And then my husband, Tom, would get defensive because he thought we were sharing and I didn't think we were sharing at all. And so it really took us a long time. What I did with him is what I do as a reporter. I took out a notebook and we'd go on long walks and I would interview him. Why did you never take parental leave? Why do you not know where the dentist is? Why do you think doing the dishes means you never have to wash the pots? and we really started working on, well, what are the common standards that we both can agree to? And what is the work that it takes to run the family? And we began, and it's still a work in progress, but it is so much fairer. We began to sort of come up with rules for who should do what, you know, when we need to flex because people's schedules are going to change, how to kind of get back on track when we've kind of gotten out of whack, how to keep talking. And to be perfectly honest, when we became better at being fuller partners rather than me doing everything or being in charge and then just asking him to do something like, oh, please do me a favor, do the dishes. What? Are you kidding me? That actually freed up a lot of mental space in my brain and it freed up a lot of time. So I think that was one of the biggest things is learning how to really truly share the load. And then there are other strategies that I've learned that have helped uncontaminate my time.
You made some concrete changes in your life, but you also write about how, to a certain extent, busyness is a status symbol in American culture today. How does that work?
Right. Well, I was surprised about that, you know, initially, because you talk to people and everybody feels overworked, overstressed. They feel kind of pulled by the demands of parenting. We're so afraid for the future for our kids that we want to make sure that they're prepared, that they're going to get into a good college. So we make sure they go to Mandarin lessons at three and, you know, toddler painting, and we get them into travel soccer and sports and everything. There's just kind of so much breathlessness going on. And yet at the same time, there's always a lament, like people don't really want to live this way. And so I was thinking it was more initially that people were kind of in mourning, that they didn't have a choice. And I wanted to try to understand, well, this kind of busyness, do we have a choice? Is there a choice? And so I found a researcher who looks at busyness and the fast pace of modern life, and she lives in Fargo, North Dakota. And I called her up and I said, Fargo, are you kidding me? I live in Washington, D.C. I thought maybe the busyness was because I live in a place of crazy type A driven achievement oriented people, or, you know, maybe New York or L.A. or Chicago or the big cities. You would have this kind of, we've got to be so busy and doing and going all the time. And she just said, yeah, honey, you want to meet some overwhelmed North Dakotans? I can arrange that. So I went out and I observed a focus group that she was running, and it was fascinating that there was a real yearning for leisure time. But there was so much busyness. They felt like they couldn't do it. This one guy said he worked two jobs. He was taking care of special needs kids, and he said, "Oh, I'd love to go canoeing, but you know, I'm just so busy, and sometimes taking time for leisure feels weak." And I thought, wow, you know, we've really lost the value of, you know, taking time for leisure or refreshing ourselves, that we've lost that sense that it's important because it's not productive. Everybody was sort of bragging about how busy they were, but how much they were getting done. And then this woman burst in at the last minute and apologized for being late and listed a huge long list of stuff she'd done. And at first I thought, man, she sounds like me. And then she said, oh, and then I got stuck in traffic. And I looked out the window, and there are like three cars at the traffic light and cornfields as far as you could see. And that's when it hit me. It's like, it's become such a cultural value to be busy and to kind of talk about it, that, and this is Anne Burnett, the researcher's contention, that humans are wired to conform to whatever the standard is, and busyness has become our standard, so that sometimes we can even create the perception of it when it may not really be there.
And isn't part of her work analyzing holiday cards?
Right. That's actually how she got the idea for doing it. And it's funny, I call the holidays not just the second shift for women, but the third. You know, your workload just goes up exponentially. And a lot of that is from custom and tradition that we haven't just kind of reimagined how to share that. But Anne Burnett started looking at her Christmas cards and noticing that people were writing not just holiday greetings and so lovely to see, you know, to see you this year, or we're reflecting on what we love this time of year, but became these almost brag sheets of how much people could cram into their lives. And so she began collecting holiday cards and letters, and she now has an archive from the 1960s forward. And we spent an afternoon going through them. And after a while, you start getting really nervous because these people are so busy.
And want to tell each other about it. That's what we value now, it sounds like. So when you made changes in your life to have a little bit more room for leisure, was there something uncomfortable about having some downtime?
That's a great question, because before I wrote this book, absolutely, I would have told you that I didn't deserve leisure time, that it felt selfish and guilty, you know, and that it would be wasted, and there's other stuff I should be doing. And what was really important in this book is learning about human performance standards, so to speak, learning about leisure. In a sense, leisure is really where we've created civilization. It's only when we take our nose away from the grindstone that neuroscience is showing that's when we have our most inspirational and creative moments. That's when the aha moment comes. In that kind of downtime, when we are, you know, you're able to daydream and let your mind make different connections, it's actually in idleness that our brains are most active. That's when the wheel was created. That's when art and philosophy, literature has been created when we're not busy kind of with the doing and getting of surviving in life. And I began to see how important really that kind of time out of time, that leisure time is, and reading about how peak human experience is what they call flow. When you are so engaged in something that's just a little bit of a challenge that keeps you completely present and in the moment, that's actually when humans are most happy. And I didn't have, and that requires long stretches of uninterrupted time, and I didn't have any of that. And so I think the most important thing for me was to read some leisure literature that showed in the 90s they did a study, and they found that women, particularly around the globe, if you asked them about leisure time, that to a one, it didn't really matter what your country was, your socioeconomic status, your race or ethnicity, or even your age, that women universally felt they didn't deserve time for leisure.
Well, we have to leave it there. We have to leave it there. Think about that this weekend, listeners. Leisure time. I've been speaking with Washington Post writer Bridget Schulte about her book, Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. Thank you so much for joining us.